cognizant of, because it newly and incontrovertibly or non, because it is a knower, an incontrovertible new knower, a new incontrovertible knower, they are able to posit, say this one thing, this one illustration of the I consciousness as being a valid cognizer and as being a new incontrovertible knower.
Tegare ta chimi tu ba de chima ngara de tene dira lo de chimi ne yo pa ge chene kare yi ta na yo pa ge chene kare de oh ya ye du ge chene kare de
chame me ba sa de
chimi mi ba yo pa ge chene ye du ge chene
shi du ge chene
tu ba
what is the definition of existence, that which is observed by valid cognition? What is the definition of established base, which is another word for existent, that which is established by valid cognition? So, thus, once the definition of existent is that which is observed by valid cognition, once the definition of established base is that which is established by valid cognition, these definitions are very important. When you understand this well, then later when you meditatively cultivate the Madhyamaka view, then you will not fall into the fault of an overly broad identification of the object of negation. It pronounces the word for posit and refute relatively the same way. They're very, very different. But in the mind only, the Chittamatra system, they posit other. Other powered phenomena, paratantras, other powered phenomena as truly established, and they posit thoroughly established phenomena, that is to say, emptinesses as truly established, but they posit the imputed phenomena as not truly established.
So
then, when the Madhyamakas posit their view, refuting the Chittamatra view, they, through refuting that other powered phenomena and thoroughly established phenomena are truly established, overcome this predominance of emphasis on the object. Now, in the Svatantrika system, they posit a balanced version of this power, half on object, half on subject. What do you say? They posit a mode of subsistence of objects which depends upon its appearing to a faultless consciousness. So now they assert that an object has its own mode of subsistence within this context, but they also assert that objects are dependently arisen. And the Prasangikas, when they look at what the Svatantrikas are doing, see great contradiction in positing that objects do have their own mode of subsistence, even if it be within this context of being posited through appearing to a formless consciousness, and they're positing that objects are dependent arisings. In the non-Buddhist systems, they not only don't assert that objects did they not assert that objects are not truly established, but also they don't assert that objects have dependent arisings. And that they don't assert dependent arising and so forth is not amazing. They're following their own teachers. However, the lower Buddhist systems are asserting dependent arising. But then they rather amazingly posit that objects are truly established. And that is amazing. Did you get it? He's saying there's nothing amazing that the non-Buddhists don't assert. So again, it's not very surprising that the non-Buddhists don't assert an absence of true establishment of objects, because they don't assert dependent arising following their own teachers. But the Buddhist systems are following their teacher who asserts dependent arising, and then on top of that assert true establishment of objects, and that indeed is amazing. And they say that's a great contradiction. So now, with the Swatantrika system, we are seeing a system that identifies the object of negation in a too narrow fashion. Those below them are sort of minor versions of the too narrow identification. You could say grosser versions, right? Why they're identifying as identifying the object of negation too narrowly is that they don't know how to refute the actual object of negation. And they are refuting some object of negation. And within that object of negation, they are not refuting what the prasanga has refuted. Their object of negation is said to be too narrow, too small, and that they are asserting a too small object of negation. So now, we identified earlier a group that knew a little bit about reasoning, but were unable to posit establishment by valid cognition. But they aren't people who don't know any reasoning, like farmers and so forth. And they do have some knowledge of philosophy. And when they refute the object of negation, they refute inherent existence. But along with refuting inherent existence, they refute establishment by way of valid cognition, and they refute existence itself. Thus, because they are refuting existence itself, their object of negation is too broad. If they cross over the boundary of what is to be negated. So both of these groups, whether they're refuting too much or too little, are holding that whatever exists must inherently exist. And if there is no inherent existence, then there can't be any existence. So on this side of the two little side are the Svatantrikas, and he didn't say, but etc. And on the other side are those who know a little bit about reasoning, but are unable to posit establishment by way of valid cognition. And who are not propounding a system, he's not including them among systems of tenets, the ones who are too narrow. And the Svatantrikas, Svatantrikas posit establishment by way of valid cognition, and along with that inherent existence. They cannot distinguish between those two. They cannot make this distinction. Thus, within that context, then, they identify an object of negation. They cannot arrive at the proper boundary of the identification of the object of negation. Identification of the object of negation is too broad. These people who know a little bit about reasoning but really aren't involved with any school of tenets, when they posit inherent existence, but along with positing inherent existence, they take everything else along with it. He removed then the boundary. So thus, these people fall to an extreme of annihilation, they're propounding a view of non-existence. Whereas those people on this side who are refuting too little have fallen to an extreme of permanence. So thus, the Prasangikas say that both of these have fallen to extremes. Thus, it is necessary to distinguish between inherent existence and existence, not joining the two together, not fusing the two together. If one knows how to posit inherent existence and still not posit, one knows how to refute inherent existence and nevertheless still posit existence, then one will not fall to either of the extremes and can proceed in the middle. One will be in the middle. And these two are, however, very difficult to distinguish. If one were debating against the Svatantrika, they would answer that the Prasangikas are doing away with the very subjects themselves. So the Prasangikas have to say over and over again, I'm not doing away with the subjects, the phenomena themselves, but I, you know, there is this qualification, these words, inherent existence, ultimate existence. But the Svatantrikas and so forth answer that if you refute inherent existence, there won't be any subject, any phenomenon left. And the Svatantrikas have a difficult time with this. And indeed, if we arrived at the point of even being Svatantrikas, we would probably have a hard time also. Of course, I can't say where you might have arrived. Thus, it seems that when you refute inherent existence in terms of the self, the person, it seems that the person itself is refuted and there's nothing left over. Now, for instance, when a magician does a magical display and causes a small stone or pebble to appear like a horse or an elephant, this is the Svatantrika's complaint, that when the magician does this, the objects are posited by the mind. It's due to a mistaken mind that those objects seem to have existence. They're posited by the mind. If it was sufficient just for the consciousness to posit the object, then even those things you would have to say ridiculously would exist. So they're saying, well, similarly, that object, this mistaken object, is merely posited by the mind. And what you're saying about actual objects are merely posited by the mind. So there are many sorts of things. There are many things that appear to our minds. For instance, the horns of a rabbit even and so forth. Then you have to say that these things exist. Therefore, this claim of yours, this is the Svatantrika's complaint, this claim by use of Prasangikas that objects are only merely designated is not feasible. If things were only imputedly existent, then all of these ridiculous things, the horns of a rabbit and so forth, would have to exist. The Prasangika's answer, what you say might seem to be true, might seem to be so, but there's a distinction that needs to be made. There's a difference. Now, within being imputed by a consciousness, the consciousness indeed must impute the object, but within those things that are imputed by objects, there are those that exist and those that don't exist. Among those things that are designated or imputed by an imputing consciousness, those which are damaged by a later conventional valid cognition don't exist, whereas those that aren't damaged by a later conventional valid cognition do exist.
Mm-hmm. tagore. And then tapatalo yoba the mebani yore, tani bitama gang, never you're not called mebari, tani bitama gang, never me do not call, never you me do not call yoba sagore.
So he's repeated among those things that are designated or imputed by the mind, there are those which are not harmed by, not damaged by later conventional valid cognition, those exist, whereas those that are harmed by later conventional valid cognition don't exist.
Tarangani tuba Quran le sendal tu rangani tuba Quran an kare re tane log pa ta pare tane be chama gen khol ne ge mare ta ko yondo re ba ta mare te tane te khona ne la che bi tane ba tare te khona ne la
Well, what about inherent existence itself, or object, or the establishment of objects from their own side? This is imputed by our consciousness. It is not harmed by later conventional valid cognition. What about it? Are you going to say it exists? No, it doesn't, because it is damaged by an ultimate reasoning consciousness. There is a consciousness that analyzes the mode of subsistence of phenomena. And for something to exist, it must not be harmed by it also. Thus, something that possesses these three attributes exists, and something that does not exist. So it is by way of these three characteristics, these three features, that be, he's saying, imputed by a consciousness, that it not be harmed by later conventional valid cognition, and that it be not be harmed by ultimate
by a reasoning consciousness analyzing the ultimate.
For instance, the reflection of a face in that a reflection of a face in a mirror is a face is doesn't exist because it is that. Is damaged by later valid cognition. And the object of negation itself, inherent existence or the establishment of objects from their own side, it doesn't exist because it is damaged by an ultimate valid cognizer or reasoning consciousness analyzing the mode of subsistence of phenomena. And those that aren't refuted by such, those subjects, those phenomena, that those things that aren't refuted by such exist. And those that don't have these three qualifications of being posited by them, right? He's saying posited or imputed by the mind, not being damaged by a conventional cognition, not being damaged by a reasoning consciousness. The same, just to those that don't possess those three don't exist, those that do exist. And those that do possess these three qualities, they exist, they are name only, they are nominal, merely nominal, they are merely imputedly existing. Those that possess these three attributes are merely nominal, are only imputedly existent. And if they weren't just posited by a conventional consciousness, but were posited from the point of view of having their own mode of subsistence, then they would be inherently existent. That inherent existence is the object of negation. If you're not satisfied with objects merely being imputedly existent and seek for something more, then that something more is inherent existence, the object of negation. And if you think that an object is not just, if you're not satisfied with an object's being imputedly existent, but feel that there is something beyond that, that is the conception of the object of negation. That's how you conceive of inherent existence.
And this
type of conception of inherent existence operates naturally, automatically within all common beings. This mind is called an innate awareness, an innate consciousness.
And with a
weaker type of consciousness, one has to watch in order to get a hold of the way that objects appear to inherently exist and the way that the mind conceives or apprehends objects to inherently exist.
When I command the Zungubiyona,
for instance, if you're going to catch a robber, it has to be done in such a way that the robber doesn't know that you're trying to catch him. It has to be, you know, done some clever way. If the mind that is watching is too strong, then the mind conceiving of inherent existence will fade, disappear.
So thus
you have to allow a mind conceiving of inherent existence to be generated well. And then with a small consciousness, look at it.
And
when one first looks into this, people say they get this sort of appearance.
That
sometimes when you first look into it, it just seems as if from outside there's this blackness.
And then later you
get a sense of your own elements appearing from within. And then since you're looking for the self, it does seem in time that only your mental and physical aggregates appear.
And then there's
another appearance that comes as if the eye is like some sort of stick, like some sort of upright thing appearing from within your own chest.
And
then sometimes when you look at it, it is as if there isn't anything there, as if it's just a great emptiness or vacuity. But it seems that none of these are the mode of appearance of inherent existence, the mode of appearance of an inherently existent I, Buddha and I. You have to promote the generation of this consciousness that conceives of an inherently existent I, for instance, by imagining many people, and in the midst of that, somebody standing up and loudly accusing you of being a thief.
Ah, 上上用过的也是个东西。